again, just mind-blowing.
So. That's so cool. Do you have a route at the final table? Any of these players you know from around?
No, not really. I've seen a couple of them from the different TV shows and different spots, but don't know any of them personally, so best luck to all of them.
You going to come to the banquet tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Very, very cool. Well, thank you for coming by and saying hi to us, and I'm sure you're going to be heard from again, and congratulations on a fantastic run, and I'm sure you'll be back.
I will. Thanks to you both. This is like, you know, check the box for me, so I appreciate the time.
Well, awesome. And I'm glad you put in a plug for Retama, too, which is a nice little track.
Yeah. Home, so... All right, I'll let you guys get back
John
to it.
John Pender, buddy. Everybody.
Appreciate it.
And,
thank you.
And an outstanding performance that really will resonate. This is exactly what we're looking for.
Yeah.
in a player profile. And
new blood, get those rookies going deep. And I think contest's so important, not just because for a Texas player it gives you a way to continue to play online, but also... You know, we talked, Steve, about the analytical minds that I agree are under-marketed to.
Unbelievable.
It's contests when you can create, you know, especially in the live bankroll world, where you can really create a sense of value, a de facto takeout reduction, really. You make the economic terms better, it's going to be much more appealing to those guys. Contests have done a really good job doing that.
Well, and whether it's the ADW companies or the racetracks that have tried to plug in and use the contest as a method anyway to lay out an offer. I mean, there are the concerns, and maybe we'll hear from Dave Goodfriend tonight about it. You know, about the cost structure, and you know, there's some internal mechanisms there that rankle some people. There's no doubt. So that should not be just glossed over.
No, it's a serious issue, and I don't want to talk out of school about it. I am interested to hear what Dave has to say, but I mean, I'll just put it this way, Steve. From the minute I started working with DRF and NTRA years ago in promoting this contest, I just wanted transparency. I wanted to, like, I had the idea to do a big piece. There was a lot of rumors about what the finances were, and I said, why don't we just lay this bare and let everybody know exactly what they're getting into? It's 5 years later. That still hasn't happened. That doesn't feel right to me, but, hey, I try to focus on the positives of the event. Paul Sherman always says it. It's about the experience here. It's not necessarily about the value on every dollar, but wouldn't it be great if someday it could be both? Like you say, Dave Goodfriend will probably be sounding off on this topic in just a few hours' time up on that stage, if I had to guess.
Well, I should mention, in fact, as well, that as we look up, I'm looking for the Oaklawn feed, and there it is over there. I guess they had a weather delay, and I appreciate our friend Tom Herman is alerting that. Where are they? They're at race six now.
Oh, interesting! Wow, were you aware of that, Chris? That there's a weather delay at Oaklawn?
There was, yeah. And it's
how do you think that's going to affect things?
Well, that'll probably mess the schedule up a little bit, as long as they don't delay it too much.
It seems
it may mean we don't have quite as much time between races as you know they try to space them out.
Yeah, which I think is great. Is that for administrative reasons, or is that because of the idea that you figure not that many people are going to have looked ahead to these races and to give them time to go? They have time to go race by race the way that it's set up here. Is that by design or just a happenstance?
I think that it may be a little of both, but it was more just to make sure they have time to get the picks in. They have a whole process for people submitting their picks so we can display them right as the race goes off. So they just didn't want to try to, even plus with post-drag, it's hard to predict exactly what's going to happen.
What's going to happen, Lynch?
A quick rundown. Why don't you guys run down the numbers? I want to ask. I'm going to ask Keith right now about that situation.
Absolutely.
Well, is that enough movement on the leaderboard in the first race, you think, Pete?
Now, I'm going to needle you back and point out that that's more leaderboard than we've seen in the other 5 years of the final table in one shot. But look, I think it's cool. I was not ever meaning to say it was
horribly flawed. I promise I won't say anything else again.
It's also like you want to put something on TV. You're gonna need more of what we saw in the last race and less of what we saw in the the previous years. Anyway,
and it's just started. I mean,
there's gonna be more, right?
Oh yeah,
there's gonna be more.
I expect to see lots of interesting things that happen. Although you never know, someone might catch fire and open up, but then they deserve it, right?
That's right. That will be a championship earned. Steve, do you have some news for us?
Well, they're just gonna roll with the situation, and you know, right now the Oakland's already running about a half an hour behind things. The sixth race had been scheduled for 3:46. It's already 4:11 there, so. They're just going to roll, and whenever the eighth and ninth go off, that's when they're going to deal with them.
It may work out pretty well because of that last race at Santa Anita comes off the turf. Maybe our final race will be at Oakland.
It looks like they're going to be okay at Santa Anita, though. I think. I hope.
The track doesn't look very good for
the main track. The main track's wet, and they're hanging on for dear life at Santa Anita to run this on the grass.
Interesting.
I've never seen him run down that hill when there's been any moisture.
Absolutely never.
Right away.
Yeah. Absolutely never.
Yeah. So,
it's a little bit of a safety issue, I think, with the downhill trajectory.
Sure. It is. Coming in with that momentum.
Let's dive in and run down with just a minute on the board to this 11th at Gulfstream. And Quizadios, 30-1, Terry Pompey, Archidust. George Navarro, 22-1. Scooter Dickey, who ran a good second earlier behind a short-priced winner, the Chad Brown, Seth Klarman winner, has got our best friend DL, 23-1. Splice the Main Brace, who I like, Butchie Reed with Albin Jimenez, 6-1. Jungle Warrior for Jimmy Jerkins and Stronach, Jose Ortiz aboard, 5-1. WW Springtime, Scott Becker and Luis Saez leading rider, 23-1 on the meet leading rider. Outshine, who scratched from the other day's heavy head allowance race and has been working well apparently. Outshine, Todd Pletcher, Johnny V, 3-2.
Getting hammered.
That seems like a major underlay, and I don't think anybody is taking him at that price. The Right Path, 5-2, Jorge Duarte with Javier Castellano, second choice. Combination, and this is Joe Orsino and the Greens, Errad Ortiz Jr., 11-1.
That's my horse.
There you go, combination.
Yeah, I really like the rider switch. Is really interesting. You go from Paco to Irad. You go total different style. So I'd expect to see this horse settle and make a move. And it showed some talent, and it's a good price. That's kind of the horse I'd probably be playing if I was up there at the final table.
No matter which position you
were in? Yeah, I would probably that one right now. If I was on top, I'd try to make a move. If I was at the bottom, I'd try to make a move with that horse.
11-1, and then we go to the outside. Admiral Lynch, a Super Saver colt, a second Navarro player in here with Nick Juarez, and Juarez winning the last race, and it just so happens that in the wake of the injury to Romero Marat, we talked last week after the surgery, we talked to Walter Blum Jr., and Walter has picked up the book of Nick Juarez, and it seems to be paying some dividends. He's doing a favor.
Nice ride in that last race.
I love
it. That was a nice trip.
Nick Zito was the first several winters ago. I asked him, what about this Juarez? And he says, I like him. I tell you what, the kid marries himself to the rail. He is a ground-saving freak.
And an agent that can get you guys like Falcone, whose horses tend to all be live, he can get you mounts with those kinds of trainers, that's going to help. So,
the horses making their way toward the gate. They've had signal trouble from Gulfstream all afternoon. Casey standing by at the studio, and maybe Casey will let us. Maybe we're lucky that we haven't had any. Doesn't look like there's any weather at Gulfstream.
No, Sunspot seems like it's probably the best guess.
This is a great contest race. There's all sorts of angles
absolutely.
You can play in this. You know, all sorts of horses that have interesting angles to play. So I would expect to see a pretty spread out set of picks.
As it was the case in the first race, so it'll be good to see, hopefully, another spread here. I tend to agree that I would think that the when you have a short price favorite in a seemingly contentious race like number 7 here, it wouldn't shock me if nobody went there. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a chance we'll see zero horses
yeah,
there?
Yeah, I would say there is, just because I think, as Steve alluded to it, I mean, the horse may be live, but he's big underlay, and it creates some value in the rest of the field. So I would think somebody's going to find something they like other than that favorite.
I want to let people know, for those of you that haven't seen or noticed it or heard the specifics, Jorge Duarte Jr., an assistant of Alan Goldberg's. Alan Goldberg pretty much retired, and the Colts Neck horses, the Santulli horses, now under the care of Jorge Duarte. So it's not like this is some big, when you see the switch from Alan Goldberg, it's not like it's a major upheaval. It's a transition from Alan, his long successful career, taking a back seat to assist
this race.
His second start, and certainly working well. I'll tell you, your horse has got a string of bullets.
That workout, its last workout, was awesome. And they had it run out to target, too. So I think you can make a case. I wouldn't talk anybody off anything in this race. And I think we'll see some pretty aggressive selections, I think, from the leaderboard. And probably quite a few different horses will be picked.
Well, and that's what makes it fun. There he is. We've been waiting for a Bayshock sighting, and here he is, the champ. You know, not everybody wins something and a championship and then gets to carry the title, the champ, around. But you somehow have got it. It's stuck to you.
I don't know why. I didn't earn it. I just won a contest, but I certainly didn't. But it does. It has stuck, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. But it's stuck. At least it's not former ex, washed up. It's just champ.
Well, so,
it may be both, but it's not necessarily public that it is. Who knows if I'm washed up? I may be. I don't feel washed up, though.
Well,
I feel like I got another run in me somewhere.
Oh, I know.
So, there's no doubt. How did the contest go for you?
Well, it went. I think this is a story that could be repeated by the 100 people that finished out of the top 64, but all my 15-1s and 10-1s that ran second, of which there were 7, no one's counting. If one of those would have won, maybe I would have made the top 64, 67, but it might have changed the outcome of the, maybe I didn't take the 27-1 at Oaklawn yesterday, with Calvin Burrell. Yeah, maybe I wouldn't have. So, who knows? I've learned one thing. I've learned, I think Chris can attest to this too, is that you can't go back and look at how a contest develops and then predict how you would have played it, because there's just too many intangibles and too many
the decision
things
that, tree. We
it's
call
a decision
it.
Tree. Exactly. Yeah. That's why they pay you the big money, Pete.
Pay myself these days, but still.
The decision tree just has so many branches at that point that you can't go back and see what would have happened.
Funny to see you two guys sitting next to each other thinking back to your big win, Michael. So I'll just ask Chris this. Chris has been trolling me all day, so now I'm going to troll Chris. And, Michael, you'll have to hand him the microphone for his response to this hard-hitting question. What did it feel like to lose $800,000 or your share of $800,000?
A million. A million.
Right, right. Well, he was part of an entry that won, too. You tell the story, Chris.
It was Oh, we better wait.
We'll tell it after the race.
All right.
Okay.
After the race. All right, here we go. We're getting ready, and there goes the signal again.
Geez.
This has happened now a couple of times.
I'm going to go to Periscope this from closer.
All right. They're banging around the gate. You do have a full field, fullish field of 10, and here we go. Here is Peter Aiello.
Splice, the main brace, was off in traffic. It was a good start for the right path from the outside. Also away with speed is Admiral Lynch. In between horses, Combination. Down at the inside, our best friend DL moves into the top light to take third. Back to fifth is WW Springtime, then Outshine with Squeeze Adios along the rail. The three at the back are Archidust, Splice, the main brace, and Jungle Warrior. Down the backstretch they go, and at a big price, it's Admiral Lynch who throttles clear. Up on the outside, that's the right path, now a closer second. Combination is three wide third, out shine is a four wide fourth. Down at the inside on our best friend DL, here's a move from the outside from Archidust. He'll have to go four wide, back to Squeeze Adios and WW Springtime, then Jungle Warrior and Splice the main brace. Around the far turn they go. They went 22-4 for the opening quarter speed. Admiral Lynch in front to length and a half. The right path working awfully hard. Second up on the outside. Here's a run coming from Outshine. He's up into only two lengths off the lead. At the inside, our best friend DL hasn't been asked yet. Combinations alongside him with Archidust, and they're at the top of the stretch. 45-4 for a half mile. Outshine continues to close ground at Admiral Lynch in between horses in the right path, who's in tight. Final eighth of a mile. It's now Outshine who puts a neck on top. Admiral Lynch kicks on from second, back to third in the right path, down the center combination, but Outshine will do exactly that. He'll win by two in the end. Admiral Lynch second, the
nothing.
Right path third, then combination in 123.
Nobody has anything. No movement. That one just goes by the board. How about that? There's a surprising circumstance when the favorite wins at 5-2 and ran well after scratching from Saturday from the global campaign race, and then the longtime leader, actually the 35-1 shot, is going to hold second.
Yeah, there was a little bumping in the stretch. I'm sure Joe Perry's thinking he needs an inquiry right here, because the 10 may have come out a little bit, and Joe had the 8 there, and that would certainly give him a little more breathing room.
Good point. Yeah. Good point. And so, it was Joe Perry and Richard Coles that both took. Both took the right path.
Nobody had the 7. It's kind of surprising to me.
I called it. I didn't think anybody would have the 7.
But it's a nice price horse, 5-2. I mean,
he was
hard to find at 5-2.
He looked like an underlay to me, the kind that people weren't going to take in a race like this. Plus, they figure they aren't going to lose much if he does come in.
But the problem is the leaderboard is so close. The leaderboard's so close.
I mean,
that 5-2 horse, if you're in third or if you're 10, 12, you know.
Hey, if you really liked it. It didn't look like the kind of horse to me that you could have a real strong opinion on, unless you're part of the barn.
Well, and the horse that you cited, Combination, 10-1, was coming late, but to no avail. It's going to be fourth. 7, 10, 8, 9, 5.
You know, Steve, you've been doing this and watching these final tables more than anybody for the last few years. Have you ever seen a final table that is as close as this is? I mean, this just brings in so many different strategies, that in former years when somebody's up $40, you know, you're kind of locked in.
Right.
Right on, you know what you got to do. But this is very interesting to me in that there's, I don't know, is there just a pick winners type of, you know, strategy here?
Yeah, I think, you could take some different approaches for sure. I mean, it's definitely much more wide open, so everybody feels like they have a chance to win.
Just watching, no inquiry, no...
There's an objection and an inquiry.
There it is. There it is. Good call.
So
good
Joe
call,
Perry,
Mike.
Not only is he sweating out having to win $800,000, but now he's got a little added sweat to the equation. He's got to hope that they take this 10 horse down for second.
And you know what's interesting, the right path took money late and ended up being almost a co-favorite with Outshine. If you had taken the right path, you were hoping to get, the 7-2 or more. This is not.
It won't be worth a whole lot if he gets put up here, but it'll be another $2 or $3.
Can't hurt.
The difference between winning.
Can't hurt.
Michael well knows.
I mean, I can just say from experience, Chris, that every dollar counts.
Every dollar counts
when you're looking at the top of the leaderboard and. If breakage wouldn't have happened the way that it happened for me, I wouldn't be sitting right here talking to you two guys. So luckily I even got the good part of the breakage in certain instances, during the 2 days. So.
And this is the kind of leaderboard where $1 might be the difference between 800,000 in second place.
You know, I got to say, I have a couple of friends on this board that I'm, you know, rooting for.
Sure.
But I really want Chris to win.
To have him repeat.
I really do. I think
that would
be
phenomenal,
so great
just
for
to
our,
win 2 years
yeah,
in a row.
For the whole contest growth, you know, that you can really point to, like, this is a superstar, a guy who's won it twice in a row. And you know, people would take interest in that. And I think that's the kind of thing that, you know, helps us grow, you know, the purses and the entrance. And I really, to be honest, I'm pulling for him to win it back-to-back.
Well, that story, and, of course, we think back to the first two Breeders' Cup betting challenges when you had the amazing Magui Helmers Exacta right. 2 years in a row, which you I know somebody, I think Andy Serling, I asked Andy, because Andy's great with probabilities and statistic-type stuff, about what the odds were of having, we're talking about Magui and Helmers the 2 years in a row, and because Michael says he thinks it would be a great story for the industry and for the contest world should Chris Littlemore replicate last year and win again.
I can only assume you're in this small fraternity that you guys are in, Michael, that you're rooting for Littlemore and rooting for that story. He's shaking his head, yes. All right, unless you've talked about it before, now you can answer my question, Chris, about Michael beating you out of your share of $800,000.
Well, yeah, I don't know if people want to hear my tough beat stories, but, you know, my good friend Dave Flansbaum and I had traveled all over the country playing in contests, and he was in the NHC, and he led the final day all day long up until the last race. And he made his final play, and it was a three-horse battle, and all he had to do was either win or finish second, and he would win.
So Glorious Dancer winning if the Flansbaum horse was
and
second.
And who got beat a neck for the win and a nose for second. And plus, the odds were dicey. I didn't know who Michael had played, but I didn't think he'd play that horse because there's a good chance it wouldn't even be enough to get there.
Well, what was your thought, Michael? I think I've asked you this before, but yeah, what was you weren't worried about coming up short?
Oh, sure. And I mean, I've told this story before, but you know, I went to make the bet. I waited as long as I could because, as Chris said, I knew I needed 3-1. And when I pushed the bet in, I looked to my left, and my son was racing out of the auxiliary room saying no, 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 because the horse had clicked down to 5-2, which I knew at that point would not be enough to overtake Dave even if I had won. And I said, well, I'm locked in. So,
all right. We got.
You know, I don't know about y'all, but I follow horse racing a little bit. This feels to me like that's going to be a significant event in the contest, because I mean, you could put up, it's only going to be probably four bucks, right? I don't know, $4 or $5, but that could be I'm going to predict right now that's going to be significant.
It seems like a good prediction. The eight moving up into second. We're going to have prices here in a minute.
What would have been unbelievable, it would have been if somebody had had the 10 here,
right?
How often do you have a horse get put up anytime, right? When you're in first place at the final table in the NHC and you have your horse get put up, you think maybe it's my day. It's a good karma here.
Starting to think maybe it was written in the stars for Mr. Perry.
Maybe he's running good. I don't know. It sure looks like it. But
you just decided that was the horse that you, when you heard that with a 5-2, it was too late?
It wasn't too late. I probably could have run up to the window and changed it, but... But, yeah, it was – I had to go through so many right – not only right decisions, but right outcomes that I had no control over. I didn't even know if Dave had another play left or not. And, of course, if he would have taken my horse, I would have lost. If he would have had the second-place horse, as you said, you know, that he – it was just a lucky thing. And I was talking to – you have to be so lucky to win – this tournament. There's so many good handicappers. Not only do you have to run good, but your luck has to really run good. You have to really be handicapping at the top of your game to win it. And I just got lucky, and I think every winner will tell you that Joe Perry there, you know, got lucky. and we'll see what happens for the rest of the contest.
It adds $4.20. He has exactly a $10 lead on Randy Gallo.
Could absolutely prove to be significant. Actually, I've got one more for you, Michael, because we can't tell that story without asking for an update about the horse who you eventually claimed was Glorious Dancer. The name.
It's a wonderful story written this week.
Yeah. So,
oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah. So she's still. She became a polo pony. Well, I raced her a couple times. She won a race for me. She got a little bit of an injury. You know, I know people have heard the story, so I said it's time to retire. So I brought her back to Louisiana and didn't race her and donated her to Louisiana Horse Rescue. And she went to a surgeon who has polo horses. And so she became a polo horse, and she turned into like a pretty damn good. She travels the world. I mean, she's gone to Florida. She goes to Argentina. I think she's now like 10. And but she's a very, you know, not a top class, but she lives a great life. I mean, she's a great polo pony, and you know, I'll go over and visit her, and that's what
fantastic.
She does.
So.
You should take a polo.
Might be a weight issue.
No, there's no weight. No weight issue in polo. You can be a bovine.
I've never ridden a horse in my life. Steve.
Ever, huh?
But it's never too late.
No,
never too late.
No, it actually is too late.
It is too late. Thank you.
It is too late because I can tell you because Chuck Simon, I was in the midst of taking some lessons, and Chuck said, "You got to stop this."
Really?
He said, "You got to stop
this."
Yourself? Yeah, he says, "You're going to hurt yourself." I said, "Well, how am I going to hurt? How are you going to hurt yourself?" He said, "I got two words for you, Chris Reeve." I said, "Okay, that's fine."
Yeah, that's going to end that conversation. He was clearly very worried about you to make that dark reference.
Well, listen, if a guy, and he was, it wasn't like he was an amateur. He was a top equestrian. Come on.
Yeah.
So, good.
Fair enough.
Point.
Wasn't he
well
like
taken.
Jumping over?
Yeah.
But polo's dangerous. I mean, it's there. There is. I mean, if you're talking to that, I mean, you know, it's different than doing a trail ride.
Can I want to just follow up since Chris is here and we've never talked about this? But
I like it.
The Flans mom who I saw. A couple years later at Santa Anita at the Breeders' Cup, and we had a really nice conversation. He's such a great guy. I mean, and, you know, I did feel bad about – I mean, because that was a bad beat, 100%. But does he not play anymore? Does he play
– Big news here, going to be off the turf at Santa Anita.
I'm sorry, and I'm not looking to insult anybody. This was preposterous that they would use that race. It was moronic. There was a forecast. There was a
Michael,
are you on the committee?
Michael moving away and putting.
Are you in this?
No.
Who's on this committee? I mean, this was a absolute. Oh my!
It feels like an oversight.
It's too bad you couldn't have gotten a future wager on this being taken off the turf.
I'm not on the committee. As soon as I saw that, I think there's a really good chance it's taken off the turf, which will be disappointing.
Disappointing.
So that's all I can say about that.
Well,
to be honest with you.
Fair enough.
Traditionally, the last race at Santa Anita has always been the final race, the final table. So I think that they kind of went with it. Think it's a big field. It's a sprint race. Probably most of the horses will stay in the race, and that's, I guess, what they're looking at. But, it's definitely not optimal. Not optimal at all.
They're all turf horses, in fact. The field, oh my God, I'll tell you.
So, yeah, that's a different.
Wow.
So, I'm not on the committee. Just want to make that clear. But now this also introduces, like, another element of, you know, strategy, because you know there could probably be some scratches now. We're going to scratch down. So now we're even shortening the sequence of races from what they were to by because you know likely we might have a four horse field.
Well, the most important race now is going to be the 8th at Golden Gate, the 11th horse group of allowance runners.
I want
and who's
to
the
know
king
that
of Golden
I'm
Gate?
I'm available for consultation.
10%. Well.
We'll see what happens.
Which
with
is on the slop as well.
Yeah,
those are some random outcomes. But I am available at Golden Gate as a consultant for a small fee, of course.
What you were talking about, Dave Flansbaum, and you were going to ask
just
Chris a question.
Because I just wanted to ask Chris. I mean, I know I don't see his name anymore. I know he's busy with the businesses and, you know, in Chicago. And please tell me
What's
that I wasn't the cause of his, you know, demise.
Chase him from the game?
Well, you know, after I pulled him back from jumping off the bridge that night... Just kidding.
Michael looks stunned. No. Hands in the air.
I mean, clearly that was a, you know, I was a tough beat. I mean, it was probably it was definitely the toughest beat in contest history. It probably will be forever. So yeah, you know that, but that's not why he's not playing. He's busy with some restaurants in Chicago that had just started up then, and he just doesn't have the time to go out and play a contest. I've just spent some time with him this summer. I'm trying to get him back in, but he's just really busy. But I'm still someday hoping I can get him back here again, and we can maybe the karma will come around and he can make a happy ending of that story.
Tough question. Well, it's not a tough question, but I think it's a worthy question. How are the mandatory races chosen? How were these races at the final table chosen? What can you tell us about the process?
Yeah, there's a committee that I can't remember exactly who's on the committee this year. I think it's Jim Mulvihill is one of the members.
Ellis Starr might be on the committee.
Ellis, yeah. And so maybe, yeah.
And Tony Neville probably.
I think Tony Neville is the third person. Yep. And, you know, they're looking to try to make the idea behind the mandatory races. And I think one of the neat things about the NHC is we want to push people out of their comfort zone. We don't want you to just, you know, be able to play maiden races or just play turf races or just play one track. So, it's okay to keep talking?
Yeah, go.
So they try to spread it out. So, you know, regionally you get races from different tracks and dirt and turf and sprint and route and some different kinds of class levels. And they want fairly large competitive fields. They don't want, you know, really small fields where everybody's on the same horse. So that's kind of the thinking behind it. And the final table, though, they have real constraints because the number of races and the racing schedule. You know, they got to have 7 races late in the day and try to space them out some. So,
yes.
I think the schedule for the final table kind of really dictates, as Chris said, what races they're going to pick for that. And they like to end on the last race at Santa Anita, you know. So, but, you know, the only thing that I would say as a player is that I would rather they not be as conscious of quote-unquote schedule for mandatories on Friday and Saturday and just be conscious of putting us out of our comfort zone in full fields. You know, like I know yesterday they picked a Laurel race. It was kind of goofy. Yeah. And they had 8 horses, and there was a scratch. I mean, you know, and it was, but it was all due to schedule, so that it falls within a certain time frame. I don't feel like as a player, we're not really concerned about whether races are on top of each other, whether they're early or late. I don't think. I'm not. This is just me. I'm not.
What do you think, Chris? I mean, you're a player as well, obviously. I mean, what do you think of Michael's view?
Yeah, I mean, it makes some good points. I mean, and sometimes you're going to miss on the schedule. But I'll tell you, one thing, this comes into play, too, is I know that the NTRA works with Santa Anita to try to make sure that last race is a good race. You know, and usually a downhill race, you know, is a nice competitive race. And so I think that was already picked out to be the final race long in advance. They tried to card that. So that had something to do with it, I'm sure, as well. Unfortunately, you know, the weather didn't cooperate.
Is Rick here?
He managed to get a couple digs in all in one statement there.
That was good.
That was like multiple levels of digs.
Covering.
There.
Thank you.
It's
I'll be here all week. Tip your servers. I want to get a picture with Paul Matisse and with the champ because I don't know how often do we get, we only get them here.
Yeah.
You know what was surprising? You brought this up on Friday. The number of you know, players and former champions that didn't make it here.
It's a little bit low. It's a little bit low, isn't it? Your club, Michael? I guess it just has to do life things get in the way. I heard John Conti maybe had a health issue. Does that
sound? Well, I think his wife passed away this year.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's so terrible.
He's had a tough year.
So that was, you know. Sometimes, you know, life events can
what are you gonna
get
do?
In the way. But, it's you know, you have to earn your way here. You can't buy in. That's another thing unique about the NHC.
It's a special, one of the very special things about it. Michael, do you mind going and grab
No, I can get him.
You want to do it, Steve?
Yeah, all right. Bring him over here.
Excellent. We'll get We'll bring in another champ. I invited Judy Wagner to come by and
say
hello.
Oh, good, good, good,
good. But I have not. I
saw her for 30 seconds.
Yeah, she hasn't made it down to this end of the ballroom just yet. Are you wagering? You look like you have a route here, Chris. At the
No,
Santa
I didn't
race.
Have anything played.
Okay. All right, and here we welcome back to the airwaves, analyst extraordinaire Paul Matisse. Paul, how are you?
Hello.
I think Steve wants to get a picture of you two, so I'll talk to Chris while we do that.
Okay, very good.
We'll bring you in for a second.
But unfortunately, I can't get in this picture.
You're excluded.
Yes. I can't get in the champions picture for the NHC. Someday, maybe.
I certainly wouldn't count you out. What are we thinking? Is Oakland going to – it seems like they're progressing, like everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, they're in the paddock.
Okay, so. I'm just a little afraid if we were to lose those two races and have the last off.
That could be catastrophic.
It wouldn't be good, I'll put it that way. I wonder if it affects anybody's picks. I mean, I wonder if at this point you reach for a longer price.
I'm sure they're all looking at what are the scratches in the final race at Santa Anita, and what, you know, I would guess if it had been me, I would have already handicapped this race for off the turf. That would have been my assumption going in.
I think it's hard, though. Most people, even the preparers, I think that there's a little bit of a fear of, you know, the old, they're not necessarily superstitious, they're a little stitious. A lot of people don't, I think, look ahead to these races as much.
It could be. I know a couple people that are handicapping on the fly.
Yes.
I know Steve Siminovich told me he hadn't prepared at all. He was just going to pretend he was at the races with the form.
So. Which is fine. Listen, Chris Littlemore, that's his operandi, right? That's all Littlemore does. Paul Matisse.
I told Frank Drew last night not to do that. I took Pete's advice when I won. I watched you did a whole podcast or something on preparing for the final table.
Yep.
I remember, and you had Jonathan, you had some few other people on there talking about that the final table snuck up on you.
Yep.
So when I won, I had been prepared only because of you guys. I had watched that, and I had told Frank the same thing.
That's right. You discussed that.
I told the same thing to Frank last night.
Yeah.
So he's all prepared. I know he handicapped the races like he was going to make it, even though, you know, to try to. He didn't believe in the jinx.
You had some amazing insight into Frank Drew's story, Paul, that you wanted to share.
Yeah, that's the real story with Frank. That's he wouldn't probably talk about it too much, or even Tony. But I think it's 4 years ago now. Frank was double qualified. It was a year before I won, I think. So that'd be 4 years, right?
Yeah.
And Tony, who was on the show with you earlier, that's why I call him Step Frank. Frank's his stepfather, so he's Step Frank. His wife and Tony's mother passed away 2 days before the NHC, and he was double qualified, and he couldn't come. And he was
that's rough.
And he didn't think he was going to be able to come anyway because he was dealing with it. We didn't think it was as serious as it turned out to be. So that was a really sad time for him, and he missed out on the whole time. And he couldn't transfer him or anything, you know, unfortunately, you know. They go to the next person. We were hoping that they could move him to the next year or something, you know, and they couldn't do anything like that. And I don't think he had qualified since. So
he finally gets
his chance back to come. And he made the top 10, which
making
is great.
The best of it,
wow.
For sure. That is
it's a great story.
Of that chance. That is wild stuff. How far back do you go with Frank?
Well, through Tony. He pretty far back, because I've known Tony now for 25 years, and he's been around. Frank Drew is like the poster child for always. I use him for the contest stories, because when he retired, he wanted to do stuff in the racing, and he felt that the betting day to day was not ideal for him. So, you know, because being on a fixed income and that sort of thing, and not knowing how much he was going to play, and he got into the contests. And it worked out perfectly for him. He's done really well, just maintaining over time. He's a perfect example of somebody who's in the game, you know, solely because of the contest. If not, he would have probably been forced out.
Right. I think there's a lot of players who fit that description. It's one of the great things about him. Paul, I don't mean to bring up a sore subject, but it looked for a little while like you were going to be making a deep run at this NHC once again. You had two entries in pretty good shape. What happened?
Well, you know, everybody's going to say I'm crazy, but I handicapped way. This is the best I've handicapped at an NHC, without a doubt. Not even better, way better than I won. I got no max horses, and one of my contests had, I don't know, 13 seconds, something like that.
Oof.
This is how close I was to making it, even with the crazy results at the end, which I would have made it anyway if it wasn't for the Calvin Burrell horse in the optional where everybody had to take 21s that was too far behind.
Yep.
If that optional had been earlier, I still would have made it. And then Nick Zitto won that race that everybody was playing where I had the other horse. So if he wins, I get in. Not only in the last hour. Now, you know, you can go back and do bad beats. You know, easy in this tournament. You know, you can always
right,
go back.
Everybody's got.
So nobody really wants to hear it. But the last five plays I had in to get to I knew I had to get to 180 something. I had three races where I ran third and got beaten a photo for second. Two of them, and three of them where I had the lead and lost in the last few strides. These are my last five plays. So if I get one of them, I'm in.
Wow.
And I lost all five of them by less than a head.
That's
all five of them.
That's disgusting. That's
so, I mean,
gross.
you just impossible. I mean, the odds of that happening. And then I also need this crazy results.
Right.
You know, on top of it. You knew the St. Anita turf race was going to be that way. But that race was spread out because there was 13 horses. So you knew that that was going to impact the number a little bit. With 13 selections, it's not going to be like every person has it. The Calvin Burrell one, that's the only one anybody could play. He's the only max win in the race. Everybody needs a max. You know, 550 people need a max with two races to go.
Yep.
And that one's got to come in. And he also had no form either. I mean, it's not like, it's not even like you could, there's not, you know, I mean, if anybody was actually handicapping, you know, I mean, my father tried to tell me that he liked them. He's so full of shit.
So as a professional player, day in, day out, you deal with bad beats. You know you have to have the mental fortitude to go on. There's going to be other races the next day. This contest, once a year, does it make it harder to deal with the
beats? You said
it.
Yeah, the once a year thing, you know.
There he is.
Yeah, here he is right there. The once a year makes it so it's tough on you. And especially in, you know, it's the nature of contest that something like that happens with the Oakland race. But, you know, like, if you can sign up online the next day, you don't worry about, you know, the nature of the contest. But for this one.
Is it going to stay with you for a little while?
Yeah, actually, I don't know. It's funny to me because last year it was all my fault why I missed the cut. I did the same thing last year. I missed by about $10 in 2 years. And if you take my other contests, too, I mean, it's crazy how close I've been.
And then last year with your big run in the Consolation, that must have made you think
I got
twice.
Over that one easier because it was my own fault, I think, maybe. This one I didn't have a lot of control over. And also I really worked hard this year because I thought the handicapping was way tougher this year. And I thought I handicapped real well in a tough situation, so... And to get nothing out of it, it's kind of, you know, upsetting.
There's an important lesson here, though, away from the tournament, which is no matter how accomplished you are and no matter even if you're a good bettor and handicapping as good as you did, there still has to be some things to just go your way. And it happens that those listening that, you know, that think that they didn't handicap right, or they didn't bet right, or I didn't win, and I can't win, and that's not true. There's so many portions of the equation that can conspire against you in the final analysis, and when they stack up like this, that you know you can see. And so people that are casual players, it happens to someone like Paul Matisse.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the nature of contests, you know.
And the game in general. I mean, if you were playing on a Sunday and you those were your plays, you only would have cashed.
Well, without a doubt, and you know some of these results are were definitely that way. Where there's situations that come up in racing that you can't do anything about it. Like you're defenseless. Kind of like I was thinking about that yesterday. You know, when you're in the contest, there's almost no. There's no defense. There's nothing I could do like to prevent that result happening at Oakland. You know, I was just thinking back. What could I have done to stop that? You know, that result. And there is nothing. You know, I mean, I suppose I had two contests and I could have taken him on one of them. You know, I would have felt like that was a wasted. If the horse had run badly, like he probably would 99 out of 100 times, you know, I mean, it's a bad play in general, you know, in playing. So, but sometimes, like the game theory that we talk about, Pete, you know, once in a while, sometimes it changes in the contest, and that's hard. I have a hard time sometimes with that. That's why I have a hard time with the money contests, because the money contests are not about making value bets. You know, you would think that a contest that's based on betting is about making good bets, you know. And some of those money contests aren't that way, you know. You almost got to make bad bets to win them,
Jonathan,
you know.
JK has shown that. I mean, seriously, the crazy doubles that he's made. These are not bets that you'd ever make in life. You wouldn't make a $7,000 chalk double in life.
Right.
But in the contest, it makes sense. So I'm actually, as much as I like to needle JK, I actually really mean that. By making plays that no one else is willing to make, he's actually getting great value. It's almost that same idea that we see in Mythical of the points that other people don't have are worth more. In a way, it's really the same thing in live bankroll.
No doubt, it's a good analogy, you know. And the point you make with Jonathan too is, and he would be the first to admit it.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know, you know, these are good contest plays, but they're not. And that's one thing I was worried about with that when they were posting all the plays for the Breeders' Cup. Was
in
that
what sense?
Well, that somebody that is trying to learn the bet is going to look at all the plays of the players and say, oh, I should play like this. And it's really a recipe, you know, for losing over the long term.
You should play like that if you're looking to bet well in a contest. But
right,
there is a difference.
There's a very big difference, and you know, and I have a, you know, putting it personal, I've done this a bunch of times in these money contests where I got to get out of the mode of. And another problem I have is that in the money contest, I'm actually betting at the same time. So to separate. Where I got to make a good bet here, and then I got to make a bad bet there, is a tough spot to get your mind into, along with all the handicapping, and then where everybody's at, you know, there's a lot there. But you know, if I'm going to keep doing them, I got to get better at that.
The mental jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Do you play cash while you're playing in the NHC?
Oh yeah. This year I played probably the least I've played. I was really focused in on the NHC, but I still was betting. You know, here and there, and I screwed up a couple yesterday because of the contest, because I really wanted to concentrate on making it. So
we've been talking a lot about the Horse Player World Series. We have going into the final table our leader Jim Meeks, a former Horse Player World Series winner. We have another Horse Player World Series winner sitting here at the table, Chick Matisse. Chick, how are you doing today?
Doing fine, thanks.
And how has your tournament been? Did you ever land a blow?
Not really. I thought before I came that the key to my 3 days would be Oakland. I really have a great line on Oakland so far this season, and things just didn't work out. The track has never been fast in the 3 days at Oakland.
The wet weather contributing.
I came in on Saturday loaded for bear early in the card. I was scratched in the first race. I was scratched in the second race. My third horse went off too short, and all of a sudden, I'm really searching for plays. So it was a tough year for me.
But you did you did like that Calvin Burrell horse. Paul tells us.
Yes, I did.
You
I
said
did.
You picked that one right out.
Uh-huh. I had it picked. I did not. I did. He didn't like it. But I did not take that as desperation. I had picked that horse on the plane on the way out. It was not a desperation, even though I needed a desperation play.
We're going to go into garbage and look at those sheets. Play. We're not buying that one.
Wow, what a finish.
Horse on the rim.
3 was 70-1 in that.
Whoa.
I think he got second to 3, right?
Two-thirty. Paul's not convinced.
Paul was angry as all get out with that horse. What? I'm not sure that ended up caught the horse. That I don't know if he's told you because I wasn't privy to your whole conversation. But the horse that he had, that he chose in the last race at Santa Anita that day looked. If you could have bet the race at the quarter pole, you'd have bet everything you had in your pocket on the 12, and how he didn't continue on. And when, maybe it was more because the 11 was good. Maybe it wasn't the 12 not being good. The 11 just stuck in there and stayed in front of him and ran a very big race. But that I had chalked it up that he was going to win it at the quarter pole. He was in position all the whole tournament. Paul was in position. He had worked hard. He made good plays. But the Burrell play, going back to that, I'll take the heat. But I had that horse picked from my plane ride out here.
Paul just shaking his head, disgusted. I wish we had video here.
That took a much more mature.
Did you bet him? You must have loved him. You must have made a big bet at him.
I bet something, but I didn't. But I didn't catch. I bet an exacta box with another long shot that would have been like $1,000 exacta play, but it didn't. It didn't come in. But it takes a much more mature player to come up with a horse like that.
Rank the Matisses in terms of maturity.
In terms of maturity,
we know what Duke is. So we start at the bottom.
I got to tell you, probably none of us are mature. We're all still kids, playing a kid's game and loving every minute of it. So,
Too funny.
I don't know who. I'm the oldest for sure, but I don't know about mature.
What was going on downstairs yesterday? You know, because I only got down today for the first time. What went on yesterday with the Rainbow Six nonsense?
Well, a lot of people were out, obviously, right off the bat. Duke and I both had an all, but we didn't have the horse to win the second leg, so we didn't get there. We had 5 or 6. But they announced the people had it up here, but there was the table right next to me. The guys had it. They hit it as well. And I think across the table, the other table around us had it. So right in our area, we had 2 or 3 other winners that hit it, too.
At least it chalked out, giving
proper
horse
the right singles won. You know, so that's what made that.
We were sort of lamenting after 2 races that it was a benefit for the computer groups, but it, the way that it came.
No, I think it worked out ideally for everybody because I think everybody got a chance to make a score who singled, you know.
The 2 Chads.
And the 3 horse.
And the Stan Huff.
Yeah, the Huff horse. I think Huff was probably the biggest really single. And then anybody had to take a chance at the end probably took Chad if they were short, real short.
Yep.
So, you know, in fact, I know a guy who he hit it yesterday in Florida, and he had 3 singles on the end.
Wow.
I said, you're going to get investigated like the Bolponi. We're going to check you're going to have a tote connection with those alls in the first.
Too funny. We're hearing a couple notes, and I'm going to bring this up with you now too, Paul. Keith Shamblin letting me know that they're expecting the 70-1 shot was second, actually. They're expecting 5-horse field in the nightcap at Santa Anita.
That's, I know, the shame.
Why would they take a downhill race with rain in the forecast? Why would they put that last?
I'm not sure. But, you know, also they picked it. Our committee picked it, too, which probably wasn't the smartest move either. But
for whatever reason, in most contests, that I play a lot of, probably much more than Paul does, I play a lot of online contests. And on the online contests, they take 6.5 furlong races a great deal. You almost expect when you play Santa Anita, if there are 6.5 down the hill races, they're, well, first of all, they always have big fields, and they're always fairly competitive. But they're almost always in the online contests.
Yeah, they're like an automatic.
They are.
Even out here, you can always count on them. Well, people like this, though, because I think it really brings in more game theory into this with the where.
For sure.
Where people are going to go.
Change what you have to do now knowing what's coming up.
I actually don't hate it because I like the fact that, you know, I would rather have a short field than a 14-1.
What is Keith saying that's eliciting boos, or is it just
scratches?
It's a 5-horse field. That's, we just said 3, 4, 7, 9, 10 are the only horses running in that nightcap at Saint Denis.
Good news if you're on the top, I would imagine. Bad news if you're in that chasing group 8, 9, 10.
Really? But it's, you know, if it stays as close as it is, it's going to make it really interesting with the strategy. And then it also changes the race before it, where you have to go to get into position. And I don't hate it that if it stays close, that the guy from 10th camp is going to be locked out more than likely. You know, it's going to lock out the lower positions, which is probably what it should be. So, you know, you got to move faster. Though I think the thing I have more of a problem with, and I don't have a problem, I just think it's a good idea. And I've talked to some guys hanging around. I talked to Nick and Tamaro and Jason Beam and a couple other guys that we should have more than seven in this final table. You know, I don't think 30 minutes between races is necessary. You know,
there's definitely some spacing issue. Chris was explaining about the way that you get the bets in, but yeah, it wouldn't seem that it would need to be.
We certainly have the races. We have the races to do it on the other tracks, and at least 12. You know, I'm thinking
more like an online contest.
Yeah,
you wouldn't see an online contest that only had
seven.
That only had seven.
In fact, Paul Sherman's a big advocate that there is. It's not a contest unless there is 12. That's his, you know, if you ask him, that's what he'll tell you. He says 10's not even a real contest. And he would know. He's played more contests than anybody. And
that's interesting. I've never talked to him about that.
I tend to take his word for it. And
he knows a thing or two.
Yeah. And I think he's probably right. And I think, why not? Let's have a real contest here. You know, you get the guys here at the top, which would, you know, it'd be like you qualify for an online contest. I like the idea of that. You know,
it would certainly make this off-the-turf situation much less of a deal.
Right.
It still wouldn't be fun to have it be the last one, but with that many more opportunities, I don't think it would be offending the room to the degree that it is if there were 10.
I think it would be more fun if you're in the contest. I think it's more fun for the people watching here. You know, you sit around, you know, watching here, it kind of drags between.
A little more rapid fire. Yeah,
yeah.
This is a lot. I mean, for our listeners, I don't think it drags because of the likes of you coming by. But, yeah, we've been sitting here now for what, a half an hour, and nothing's doing, and we've got how many minutes till the next race?
Just about 10 to the 8th at Oaklawn. Paul, here's another topic that came up earlier today, and the wet track at Oaklawn.
Yeah.
And how that affects you, because clearly there's horses all the time on a Monday through Sunday basis that, you know, jump up on the wet track. Horses get loose on a wet track. It seemed during the afternoon like it would be potentially a formula for some people to get a rally going by finding a horse that might lope along out front and make it impossible for anybody to get him.
Well, my father and I had this conversation when we were going over this race here that's coming up, the 8th race. I feel like that I've come to the conclusion that Limation's an off-track horse. I can't figure out his form otherwise. And he was one that I would have never considered on a fast track.
That I 9 think, to 2 right now on Limation and, on the
and
rail.
There's some other people that obviously think the same way because he's bet pretty strongly.
He's now much lower odds than you would have thought.
That's definitely true. And it's happened today. The horse in the first race today at Oaklawn was a wet track horse.
Yes.
That won.
Yes, the horse had 13 starts and had been on the board 9 times.
Yeah,
we pointed that out. That was that one jumped off and he went off at a square price.
Yeah, 5-1, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But I think there was another race too where it was an off track proven off track horse one. So,
from a strategy standpoint, let's take a look at this 8th race. What are you doing if you're on the top half of the standings? What are you doing if you're in the bottom half?
Well, it's a little different this year. You guys probably have already commented on this, and I'm getting into, they've had, this is what they've wanted every year since they had a final table, is more bunched together.
Yep.
And it's great that we finally got one. So we're
just that movement in our first race, more than what we've seen in years' worth of activity here, off to a very interesting start. And I think we'll definitely going to see some more as we go on. There's a lot of potential here in this Oaklawn race.
I mean, I think the chalks are definitely in play for the guys that are in the top five, for sure. You know, and then
put yourself in their shoes with your given your handicapping opinion. I think people will enjoy just listening to the thought process that goes into this.
In general, in this race, I think the idea that the 6 and 7 into Shotgun Cowboy you know, the six stretching out and then the seven kind of stretching out. And he's been long before, but he's got good speed. They're vulnerable, the six and seven. So I think there's enough there to go against them. I know my father has a long shot that he likes.
Who do you like in this race at Oaklawn Chick?
I like the four.
What's the angle
on the
there?
Trainer Fires. Switch?
It's a trainer switch back to Fires, who over the last two or three years has been very good at Oaklawn. The horse has decent works, and like Paul, I think many of the horses in this field are vulnerable. I don't care for the off track is not. Thrilling for this horse either. It's not a great thing, but I think value wise I think the fours at 12 to 1 is a very, very square play.
Interesting to see John Court back riding with Jinx too, because
yes,
the Jinx's daughter and John split up.
Okay.
And there'd been a period where John was not getting
persona non grata.
Well, he just there were other people that were being used.
Sure.
I hadn't noticed of late, but that's interesting that John's back.
The thing that's great about this race, I think, is that it's wide open.
Yes.
You can make a good case for everybody.
Case for some horses.
Even like the horse that's the five that's the longest shot on the board, I kind of like. He's a very sharp horse. He's got two great workouts, and he's a little light on the figures, but not way out. You know, especially if these other horses.
Case there.
And he has shown speed. There's been occasions when he's gotten out.
Yeah,
he's got some speed.
Well, I think he'll be in a good spot. You know, off the early pressure too. This is a good contest race. This is a very good contest race, and there's a lot of ways you could go about it. I wouldn't fault anybody who goes short, and I wouldn't fault anybody who goes long here. This is a
Paul. Explain to everybody who would look at a horse like Heavy Roller, 16 to 1, longest shot on the board, especially players that aren't accomplished and aren't polished. One of the things that took a long time for me was to believe in myself that I was seeing something in a long shot. And that I would talk myself off the long shot, because if this horse had anything that was any merit, he'd be taking more money. How do people overcome that that mentality in themselves?
Well, I would point out first of all that it's a new trainer, so the thing that I would like. When horses improve, you got to have faith in the improvement of the form. And if you have reasons that go along with what you're seeing that are improving, that you see a horse improving, it's almost like you build a theory. You have an hypothesis and you say, hey, this horse looks like he's improving. He's gotten better. 4 months ago with a different trainer, this horse couldn't be in a quality field like this. But, he's gotten better, and then he's backed it up with two unbelievably good workouts. And, I have some privy of the information that maybe everybody doesn't, but it's there on the form. I know that the clockers really like his last workout.
Well, you see a horse, 48 flat at Oaklawn, fourth of 121.
Right,
no matter how he went,
right.
That's
positive.
A positive stunning.
Off of the, you take it. Maybe that alone isn't enough, but if you take that with the other information.
The kernels of confidence that you see here and there.
And that story sort of explains why the horse isn't bet, and that gives you the confidence to bet, even though the market is maybe telling you.
Well, the market, I think, is dictated on the past, not the future.
That's right.
And you're kind of looking in that his future is going forward.
Piece of advice for novice players, and this is something JK talks about all the time, how contests.
Kind of a novice player himself.
gave him the confidence, what he calls the muscle memory, to find those long shots. It was harder for him, Steve, in the early days to bet those horses with money, but then you start playing enough of those long shots in contests, mythical money contests especially, you start to know what they look like, then you have the confidence to play them with money, and you get over that hurdle.
That's a very good point. Sometimes it's just, you, you, the I've always felt for I've been playing now for about 55 to 60 years, and I've always felt that the past performances paint a picture. And you tend to, as you get into things like Jonathan, more and more and more, you see the picture. You kind of first see the picture. Then you do what Paul did. You look at the pieces that make up an individual that's in the picture, and you build on it. Now, sometimes you start off with one, and all of a sudden you hit two or three non-helpers, non-significant pieces, and you say, okay, that's not the one I want. You know what I mean? But if the things like Paul just said on the Sharp horse, he runs a big race for Sharp after the change of trainer. Then he works him 48. Then he works him a minute flat, 4 out of 120. Now, if you catch another piece of something that you might like.
Well, entering in this race alone.
He
knows that this race is going to be hard.
Be a difficult
race. He knows he's going to be 10-1
exactly.
In this race, and he still wants a piece of this, you know.
That's right.
That's one of those things that you hear early on. Jerry Brown has got his rules about a race. Why is this horse here?
Right.
Ask yourself why.
Yeah.
What is what motivated? Especially if it's somebody, especially if it's connections you respect and you know that don't misplace stock.
No, he's in here to win this purse. He's not in here to run third. You know,
you're right. The logic of illogic, and many times, is fantastic. The horse that's just what Paul said. The horse that when a trainer puts a horse. It's much easier to explain in a claimer than it is in a lounge race, but when a claimer,
the race is going.
Okay,
you're good. We're good. We got the
when a claimer looks like an 8 claimer and the guy puts him in for 12.5, you have to think they're not stupid. They don't want to put a horse well over his head. They know something that makes them want to believe that he can win at that level. We got a racer going.
We got one more, and we'll have the selections shortly after they leave the gate, and we're just about set.
Start Malibu Max out fast, Limation right on the inside. Agilator is part of that front group as well, as Limation is going to go to the lead here and establish it to Agilator. Then Malibu Max on the inside, Colonel's Dark Temper in the orange, followed to the outside by a 3-wide CZ Rocket, trying those two turns, and he's placed in fifth onto the backstretch. Followed by Shotgun Cowboy on the extreme outside, 4-wide. Back to the inside, it's High North. The back two are Heavy Roller. An exclamation point is trailing the field, and there is a good 13 or 14 lengths from front to back here as Limation and Ramon Vasquez lead the way up the backstretch by a neck, and Agilator and David Cohen alongside in second as they go to the far turn here with the short stretch looming. A good distance behind Agilation is High North, who has advanced into a closer third, followed to the inside by Heavy Roller. And up to the outside, Malibu Max. Here comes Heavy Roller, just driving through on the inside here as the front runners weaken. Malibu Max into second position, followed by High North, who's racing in third. And then to the outside comes Shotgun Cowboy. He has emerged in fourth position and is under urging. And then comes Exclamation Point. He's fifth as they come to the top of the short stretch. It is Heavy Roller, David Cabrera, with the lead here. And with a daylight advantage, Malibu Max is next. Shotgun Cowboy down the middle of the racetrack. As they come to the finish, it is Heavy Roller. Very impressive move at the turn, the second turn, and wins it clear. Malibu Max was next in second. Then
Steve,
came Shotgun Cowboy.
There you go. And, boy, Paul, there's a section we're carving out. Marshall Graham hits. Marshall Graham. You've got... Oh, the one. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. All right, my fault. So it was Coles. Yep, it was Coles that had the five. And Steve... Steve Simonovich. And is going to absolutely... jump up into maybe second.
Well, Randy ran second.
Randy ran second with the two?
Yeah, so. But well, I still think Steve's going to be in front, right? He was 13-1?
12. 12 as they were
12.
Running. 12 as they were running.
They keep moving the screens. Unbelievable.
Steve's going to have here. He's going to have about 325, and Randy's going to be right around there. There's going to be three guys within about $4 or $5.
Absolutely, and 12-1 was the final number, Paul. And you just had a clinic, folks, on this five horse. Absolutely could not. Yeah. You know, it was interesting. When you watch the replay, he was climbing early. Did you see him with the high knees? And he was real. Anybody that bet him out of the gate had to think, he's going to trail.
He leveled off pretty quickly, though.
Yes, he did.
Quick enough.
Yeah. Yes, he did. It's all about footing for them. So, absolutely.
Unless there's a huge place price, right? That's the only way that would stop them.
10-1. 10-1 on Malibu Max.
Because Randy finished second. So if he gets...
Randy gets...
It was so nice of this race to fit themselves into our conversation. Wasn't it nice for them to do that?
Coles, I tell you, we're going to have a log jam now.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have
Yeah, it's going to be a great
five.
Finish.
It's going to be fun.
Great finish.
You're going to have five horses.
This is what they wanted when they went to the final table all along. This is going to be really interesting. And a lot. This Pete's going to love it because it's going to be a lot of game theory.
Yeah, we're going to have fun. You're hired, by the way. You're, no good deed goes unpunished. We're going to need you, Paul, to talk us through.
Well, you only got 960 for two.
26-20 and 10 and change on the win. They've taken it away conveniently, and we'll get the place price that.
So Randy's 40.
Randy Gallo's.
He's 40 cents behind the Joe Perry, so he didn't even get into second.
Okay.
But they're 40 cents apart.
Dead tight. Dead
yes, 40 cents
tight.
Apart.
And what
We're
did
going to see this new leaderboard in a minute. We'll walk you through all the different permutations. And then when is our next mandatory? I just don't want it to sneak up on us, Steve.
Unless, let's make sure, because they're so late.
Yeah, that's what I want to check.
Golden Gate's not for another half hour, 40 minutes.
Okay.
So it will be Oaklawn. Yeah.
We'll come right back at Oaklawn.
We'll come right back.
So we'll have plenty of time to look at this and talk strategically.
Take a break right here.
Let's do it.
KC, we'll come right back.
Well, that worked out good.
You came
Could it work? Could it work out better than that?
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors. drivers who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.